My name is Jeff Harbach. I'm the CEO of Coffin Fellows and the host of the Coffin Fellows podcast. This season, our podcast is produced in partnership with Mighty Capital and features different Coffin Fellows as co-hosts. In this podcast, we dive deep into the personal narratives of some of the most successful names in the venture capital industry. But we're not here just to explore their highlight reels, however impressive they are. From failures and formative learning experiences to inflection points and aha moments, we discuss the real, authentic journeys that each individual goes through to become the best version of themselves in order to best serve the entrepreneurs they invest in. Covering various themes in venture capital investing, we speak with the world's top leaders in capital formation, all from a place of authenticity and vulnerability. Together, we'll unravel what truly makes a great venture capital investor. Now let's meet today's host and their guest.
Hi, and good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world. I'm Renan Ashkenazi from Grow Ventures, and I'm excited to host this series on winning the deal, the before and the after. Let's hear from my guest today.
Our general topic is winning the deal, right? What happens before, and mainly, how do you reach conviction? And what happens after? How do you make sure that you're actually bringing value to the table? But let's start with what's really interesting, okay? So how does a kibbutz boy end up in Silicon Valley?
I'm still thinking about that answer, and you know, it's been now 10 years. And yeah, you know, I definitely don't have your traditional convictional background of being an 8200 and then go to the Technion, then go to do an MBA in Stanford and finding myself as an associate in one of the VC firm and one day becoming a partner. Basically just describe most of Israelis. But you know, I definitely had a different type of a background. I think, you know, when I'm in a serious way, when I'm asking myself like how it can be that the kibbutz boy is now doing venture in Silicon Valley is, I think from youth, I like to build. And I'm just a passion person when it's coming to building, and it can come in different forms. In the form of a kibbutz and a form of venture. And I think venture capital can be a perfect platform to build at scale. And it's kind of very non-selfish, meaning you don't build one house, you're kind of a general contractor, right? You can build 10 houses in parallel. That I found that for me, I'm even more enjoying that than building a one house.
I love the metaphor. We didn't even introduce you. So you're the founding partner of Eclipse. Can you tell us a few words about the thesis behind Eclipse and the current strategy of the fund?
Sounds good. Yeah, thanks. So started the firm in 2015 in the back of 3 years being at Flextronics. Flex, it's the second larger electronic manufacturing company in the world. And I worked over there for Mike McNamara, the CEO. That today is one of my partners at Eclipse.
And yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, we did switch jobs. Now he reports to me. And you know, Flex, because I got the thesis of Eclipse in Flex. So Flex, it's almost like this microcosmos of the world GDP. So it's a 12 segments, everything from automotive, aerospace and defense, networking, industrial, energy, communication, consumer electronics, medical. And each of those segments, they will do more than $1 billion in revenue. And one of my jobs of kind of thinking on which type of a digital tools Flex should build internally was to be with Mike in the corporate jet, bouncing between the customers of Flex. Not a bit of a trick. And I will be amazed to meet the CEO, COO of Johnson & Johnson, because we'll build the insulin pump for them. And then the day after with Ford Motors, because we'll build, you know, their infotainment center in the car, and to hear from both of them the identical same message. And the message was, technology is coming to change our industry. We are the incumbents. And it's going to be this mishmash of computer vision and AI and semiconductor and IoT. They didn't really know what they're saying. They were just buzzwords on the technology. And we need you, Flex, as our manufacturing partners to help us source faster those technologies. So I will take that. That was like the first light bulb that kind of went in my head. And I will take that info and went straight to all of my VCs friends because, you know, I lived here in the Bay Area and kind of know a lot of the folks and say, hey, guys, industrial is going to change. Infrastructure is going to change. Manufacturing is going to change. Construction is going to change. And I will get not a cold shoulder, but I will get like, man, we really like you. This, you know, We just SaaS, we just fintech, you know, we like consumer application. Give us the easy stuff. Yeah. And that was essentially the thesis for Eclipse, right? My belief was most of the world GDP, around 68 out of the 85, is still what we will call old industries, and tech penetration is a single digit. And I believe that all of the tech stack is going to migrate and eat all of those markets, and we want to be the go-to guys at Eclipse.
Yeah, I love this story. I think I heard it before, and I love how Eclipse was born so thesis-driven, and we'll talk about that as well. But let's, I promised conviction, so let's talk about conviction. I feel like ultimately venture is both, it's like an art and science, right? For all the quantitative and qualitative data that you can collect, at the end of the day, your goal is one thing, right? It's conviction. Right? It's to really believe that what you're choosing to invest in now is the right thing, and that it's going to be huge, and that you're going to conquer all the challenges. And do you have a framework for reaching conviction?
So we, from inception of the firm, it's unanimous vote, meaning anyone can kill a deal, and you need all of the partners to say yes to make an investment. So naturally, you need to create a conviction, not only in your mind, you need to create a conviction amongst the partnership. We also, we call it, we hunt as a pack. So the, all of the partners will be involved during the diligence, again, in order to build a conviction. And we do very, very few deals a year. So we will make 5 to 6 investments, new investments every year. Because I actually think to build, because conviction can, the model can break pretty fast. It can break by scale. It's not very scalable. Naturally, it cannot do an enormous vote when I have 20 partners. It's hard to build conviction when you're making 30 deals a year and you have like scout funds and seed funds. Just the nature of the business, you know, you're going to have more conviction and less conviction by the size of the check. I don't know. It's for me personally, conviction is kind of the first aspect of Eclipse as a firm and as a DNA. And we kept it pretty tight in the last 6 years. And, you know, we grow naturally from first fund of 125 million. We now close to 2.5 billion AUM. Mm-hmm. And we actually didn't really change the model. So you will actually see in a lot of our companies that we potentially start with, I don't know, $5, $10, $15 million checks in the initial one, but then led 4 rounds in a row. And now have $200 million position. And I think it's hard to do it when the conviction muscles is not very developed in your body. Mm-hmm.
But that's just the thing. How do you develop it? Because I've talked to people who say we have a very methodological process and those are the stages that we have to go through, but there's so much gut involved.
We, in our case, it's actually 90% art and 10% science. So we actually
90% what?
Art and 10% science. We mm-hmm. don't believe in formulas, and we don't believe in AI to investing. And I know there's like a bunch of different films that we have this AI model on LinkedIn's of the employees, and it's going to give a score and all of that. For me, it's great and it's nice and it's supportive to my conviction that being built right here in my guts.
Yeah,
it's not replacing. I think this still we are still investing in people, and for me, people is going to be always guts versus kind of brain. But I think we have checks and balances because I'm not alone making those decisions. I have 6 other partners that need to thumbs up. And, you know, we are doing this blind votes and a bunch of other things in order to try to make sure that there is no any influence from, you know, if I vote first and people say that I'm bullish, so they will vote as well. All of this thing we're trying to solve over the years and build supportive model. But yeah, we are still old school on that end.
So it's almost like you have a security net, right? Because
we do.
Exactly.
And, you know, will happen a lot, Renana, that, you know, 5 people will say we are in and 1 person will say, you know, I really like it, but kind of I want more data in those 2 points. Because when I'm talking with a lot of people, there's like, wow, how many times happened that 1 partner's kill a deal? And 3 times in the history of the firm that actually did happen. But what happened a lot is people have a different level of conviction. And our job in the partnership is to bring them to the same place by doing work. more diligence on the market, more diligence on the team, more diligence on the technology, et cetera.
That's interesting. Another thing that I think, I mean, another aspect of conviction that I've been thinking about a lot lately is everything that has to do with speed to conviction, because it feels like this year we've been given a lot of time, right? We don't travel. We don't, I mean, how old is it to say, I mean, I can't talk right now. I need to go on a plane, right? Mm-hmm. But it seems like we have less time than ever, right? Back to back Zoom meetings all day, every day. But the speed of closing a deal has really changed, right? Because a year ago, a competitive deal would close in, I don't know, 2 to 4 weeks, I'd say. And now it's
days, a week,
2 weeks.
Yeah.
How are you dealing with that?
Yeah, it's definitely a hot topic internally for us. Give you a sense, I signed the term sheets on Friday, and we met the company for first time the Friday before.
Oh, wow.
And this company had 5 term sheets. So you can't, you have your model and then you meet reality of essentially supply and demand. And there is right now 100x more demand than supply. There's much more capital than great companies. And that problem is just getting worse by the day. And you need to take your exercise of how to build conviction and put them on steroids.
In a lot of cases,
we call it the hot lot, and we have our own analytics tools and CRMs that we are running kind of all our deals. And when thing is being put on the hot lot, it's by the way, a term from Semiconductor.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
we're basically cleaning our calendar, the whole partnership.
Yeah.
And we stop working on anything else, and we just like a pack chasing after the target. And each of us will run different aspects of the diligence, and we will go hot. And it's definitely, do I think is the most optimized process? No. But you know, you have your strategy, and then the market is determined the environment. And I think you need to react, and you need to dial all the time of, you know, how you build conviction, because it's there is a lot that depends in the macro. It's not only what you think about the world of investing.
Yeah, that's 100% correct. And I actually think you said that you don't think it's necessarily the right process. I think that there isn't really an alternative, right? I mean, those are the timeframes today. And if you don't clear your schedule and, you know, get that advantage of the process, then how are you able to even compete in this crazy playing field?
I know. And you know what? I will say my point, though, was like, if you will ask me, describe me the optimal process of building conviction, it will not be that this process. But that's, who cares what is the optimal? You don't need to live in a vacuum. By the way, I did the red eye to Boston to close that deal. So I did use the in-person meeting first time in 18 months. So it still works if you want to know.
Yeah, so now is maybe a good time to say that we did reschedule this recording.
I know.
And I think that's why you stood me up, right?
I apologize. That's true.
Well, that's okay. That's a live example. Another thing that I wanted to talk about is how investors, I feel, are often very careful. They're very insecure in the way they're looking at companies, right? There's a bit of bad news and they stop trusting their instincts. And I was just wondering if you ever felt like your instincts betrayed you.
It's a really good question. So I think in general, I'm a pretty shitty investor. And it's actually fine, because when I hit, I will hit it right. And I think, you know, I mean, you at Kaufman know much more than me on the data. You know, it's the power graph, right? Essentially, 2-3 companies is going to make all of the difference, and then the rest, you kind of don't care. One of the partners I start with the firm, he is 91 years old now, Pierre Lamont. And when we started the firm, he was young. He was only 85. And he told me that Sandy is like... He was only 85 back then. I was 31, so it was like an interesting co-founding of a firm.
He was like your sugar daddy.
Exactly, pretty much. Pretty much. Also from capital point of view. but you know, he all the time train us here to do not spend time to think about your losers. Just do not. And it's all about, you know, making rush and fast and aggressive and conviction investment decisions. And I think, you know, it goes back to the instincts. It's like, it's fine to actually make wrong investments as long as you make one that it's the right one. And I think as human nature, we will highly focus on what actually we did wrong, because we'll want to see if we need to change anything in our instinct skills. When the reality that in this business, that you actually focus on what you actually did right and go put all of your time and all of your money there. So I'm trying to do more of that. It is hard, because especially for a person that uses a lot of his instincts, and it's definitely the clips we're using, we're filmed that using a lot of instincts, you kind of magnitude to trying to fix the middle pack and kind of trying to look of what the lower pack did, what you did wrong, and analyze that. And I'm like, no, just focusing on your top decile, because actually that's going to determine the performance of the fund.
Yeah, it's kind of like a state of mind, right? It's also, I mean, you can think about it also when you do diligence, right? Do you focus on what would be the upside, right? Or do you focus on the risks and everything that could go wrong with the deal? Because if you focus on the latter, then you'll never do a deal, right?
Yeah.
I almost feel like when a founder walks into my office, then I know before he gets out a word out of his mouth, I know what I could say to say no, right? It's always the same reasons. It's easy to say no.
Totally. The thing though, the argue that I think, and we actually talked about it recently, it was a really interesting conversation, because the argue is also can stand for valuation. why is that? Is because what is the true difference between 30 posts and 100 posts? It's like 3.3x, whatever it is, right? Now, if it's a bad company, who cares? So let's say I got them, they got acquired in 100 million. So I got my capital back versus I did 3.3x. Nobody really cares, right? Mm-hmm. If it's a great company and now it's a $10 billion outcome, did they really care that they paid 3.3x more?
Yeah.
The answer is no, right? And by the way, that's a slippery slope that it's a very dangerous zone, because kind of in the current environment, any valuation will be kosher, when the reality is it's not the case. But I think it's just an interesting it's an interesting exercise to look on your blockbuster returns fund maker companies and ask yourself, what if I was losing that deal because of valuation?
Yeah.
And actually was not even around the company, so I couldn't build $150-$200 million position that translates to $4 billion returns for the fund and translate you to be 10x DPI. So it's like, without that particular company, it's kind of like, okay, found it best. With that company, it's like amazing. You are like basically going to be in the magazine.
I don't want to point fingers, but it sounds like you're the reason valuations are skyrocketing.
Yeah, it's a cost of capital conversation. And what's happening, and I know it's not a topic for today, so we'll not get too philosophic about it, but mutual funds, you know, your Fidelity and BlackRock that used to be able to generate their returns in the public market cannot do it anymore. So they go to the late stage kind of crossover rounds. Those investors, the late stage now compete with them. But naturally, the cost of capital of Fidelity is very different than TCV or IVP.
Yeah.
So they are saying, we will go early to Series B, Series C. So people that were Series B, Series C is coming to us and now compete in the Series A, and we are going to the seed and compete in the seeds. And it's just kind of a whole pressure of capital. But valuation are definitely on the highest side right now.
Yep, I have nothing optimistic to say about that.
Yeah,
neither. One thing that I think is very, characteristic of Eclipse is that, you know, generally we say that one mean of creating time advantage, if we're talking about speed to conviction, is industry specific knowledge. And I know that you're extremely thesis driven. Do you think that's something that's helping the process?
Definitely. And again, a hot topic internally. So around half of the deals that we are doing a year are outbound. And we're actually measuring how many deals we outbound every week, and we have a clear KPIs and in general where we source the deals, and we kind of have a rating system that a deal that we got from a VC scored higher than an inbound, that scored lower than
a network. What do you mean? Wait, let's stop on that. That's interesting. What do you mean scored higher?
So basically we're running an Airtable on top of our CRM that is currently Salesforce. and we are measuring where we are getting those deals. Mm-hmm. And when we will go back to build the conviction, we will look on actually how we receive the deals. And we have this little scoring systems that we know today, after doing that at 6 years, that there is high correlation between us building fast conviction in a deal that we outbound versus a deal that we got from an inbound or from a network. Mm-hmm. We actually have a high correlation of building conviction from deals that we receive from other CEOs in the portfolio. Yeah. Again, nothing too groundbreaking here, but I think it's interesting, especially when you want to build fast conviction. And yeah, I just finished the thesis here of 5G and Edge. One of the benefits of having a lot of us coming from the different operating background is, you know, there is people here that knows a lot on manufacturing and a lot in semiconductor and a lot of networking. And we will build an investment thesis in those areas and go hunt based on those investment thesis. And when we find the company, it's helped us win the deal because we kind of speak the language of the founder. It's not like, oh, come teach me on blue collar training. I did thesis on that 3 years ago. So when I met that founder and it was super competitive, the quality of the conversation, I think was stronger than maybe other people that didn't necessarily have a thesis.
Yeah, I think that's extremely strong and extremely important, especially because I feel like the value that you could bring to the table and also the impression that you'll make on the founder is profoundly different. But I sometimes find it to be tricky on the founder side because we, for example, did a space tech investment last year. And because no one really does space tech investments, then we became this like hub for space, and we see a lot of entrepreneurs in the area. But because we've created this thesis around space, then I feel like no one can really bullshit us, right? If an entrepreneur will come and say, yeah, the new space industry is a $20 billion industry, then I know that 90% of that is SpaceX. And yeah. I wonder how many entrepreneurs are, I don't know if scared is the word, but are hesitant to talk to you because they know that you'll, you know, cast or bluff or...
Might happen. I think the stronger entrepreneurs will see more value. And that's kind of what we're seeing. And I think right now it goes back to the conviction. I can build much faster conviction when I know exactly of, let's take metal 3D printing, when I know what is the bed size and what is the accuracy and the geometry and exactly what is the throughput and the cost per kilo that I want my metal manufacturing to look like. So when I meet that, you know, three core thesis, it's easy for me to pull the trigger. And by the way, it is easier for me to call bullshit because, you know, I will say, oh no, with that size of a bed, you will always going to stay in the prototype world and my thesis is on mass production. So I don't think you will replace CNC and traditional metal manufacturing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's helped us a lot over the years and we're actually doubling down on that. We want to generate more thesis than we generated before.
Okay. Are you ready for this? Because I'm going to say the F word.
Let's do it.
Okay. So the flip side of conviction or of conviction investing is passing with conviction, right? So how do you deal with FOMO?
It's hard.
You just don't.
I think it's hard. And, you know, it's again, a hard topic here. When you build a thesis, you kind of fall in love in your thesis.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm having our founder bias, right? You have a hammer and you just look for nails, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, because I have the thesis, I know what I'm looking for and anything that sounds like it, I want to drop the hammer and go win. And I think we made some mistakes, to be honest. I made some mistakes on investing in things that I shouldn't, but I had such a strong thesis based and I was just looking for something that sounds familiar that maybe I was too fast to shoot and didn't really, you know, think through the traditional diligence that I will do. So anyhow, I don't know if there is a simple answer for that question. I think it's tough.
Yeah, I think it's almost impossible. I think it's like it's innate. It comes with a position, right?
You need to take, I think, to a consideration that again goes back that if I would fund a slam dunk company that will just be, you know, so important to the fund performance, and that will come from thesis that will drive conviction, I'm fine to make three mistakes.
Yeah.
and live with that ratio all day long.
Yeah.
But we are trying to get better in it, and we are trying to kind of think as a team how we can protect each other to not build too much bias when we are building those theses and going and hunting.
Yeah. We have three questions that all Coffin episodes end with. Okay, so you don't need to think about this. Just shoot. Number one.
You know me as someone who will think before we answer. Great.
What makes a great VC investor?
Making money.
Love that.
Super binary in my mind. Yeah. You either make a lot of F money or you don't.
I hope you can all of your investors are listening.
Say it again?
I hope all of your investors are listening right now.
Helpful them.
What advice do you have for our audience of VC investors and innovators? Or what advice would you give yourself 5 years ago?
Be authentic. You cannot fake anything. Just be authentic. If you're that good in something in this life, you will do great. And just don't try to be someone else. Even if someone else is successful, he's successful because he is authentic to who he is. And I'm trying to do it for myself. I'm trying to do it for my team. I'm trying to help our CEOs. Just, you don't need to be amazing in a lot of things. You need to find this one thing that you are very passionate about it and be authentic. And if you also get lucky, you know, the stars will get aligned.
Yeah. How do you stay sharp? What books or podcasts or blog inspire you? Are there any?
Not really. I must admit, I'm not necessarily a blog guy or following any of the Clubhouse conversations. I do like to read, and, you know, I'm trying to read a lot in the areas that we are investing and, you know, trying to educate myself with cutting edge technologies. But, you know, what keep Pierre's sharp and, you know, sitting on seven boards in the age of 91 is being in this business. This business is kind of by nature keeping you on your toes, right? In 10 a.m., I'm meeting a surgical robotics company. Mm-hmm. And noon, I'm meeting a quantum computing. And in the afternoon, I'm meeting a new construction materials marketplace. So it's like, I need now to be expert in so many areas. So I actually love this business because I believe the brain cell is being developed in an accelerated way if you are that passionate about it.
I have to show you something. I know this is a podcast and only you can see this, but I have to show you the book that my microphone is sitting on.
Nice.
It's immersion lithography.
That's heavy.
That's heavy, yeah. Bedtime reading material. Lior, this was so much fun. You're the best.
Thanks for having me.
I wish we had, you know, some more time, and I'm sure that we will continue this conversation on air and off.
Exactly. And, you know, feel free in the Kaufman Network, you know, you have my email so they can reach out to you. I'm happy to help anyone that needs anything.
I'm going to publish it at the beginning of the episode.
Exactly. Exactly. Please. In a serious note, please do. And yeah, keep up the good job over there, and hopefully I'll buy a drink in Israel very, very soon.
Will do. Thank you.
That's a wrap. Tune in next week for another candid conversation on what makes a great VC investor with your host, the Kaufman Fellows.